Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Tumbele. We're now entering the second leg of our conversation. I am now joined by David Dembe, the former chief of Johannesburg Metro Police Department. And he will give us a sense about governance lapses at Metro and pretty much across the security landscape, as it were, to be more precise, the South African Police Services. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome David. David, welcome to Beyond Governance.
Good evening, and thank you for having me.
The pleasure is certainly in ours. I've looked at your resume, quite interesting in so many ways, but perhaps maybe if you could just share your, if a listener who's hearing your voice for the first time, who is David Dembe?
David Dembe, I started at EMS, Emergency Management Services. By that time, it was 1981. It was called by Johannesburg Fire and Ambulances, because it was two departments. It was one department having a director, but EMS ambulances were on their own, and then fire was on its own. I grew up through the rank until I became a director in emergency services. In 2004, I was taken to Johannesburg Metro Police. It was a recommendation from Mayor Masondo. Then in 2008, I was acting chief of JMPD. So I was sent to different training whereby we talk about skills. And then from JMPD, and then I left in 2011, I went to National to establish National Traffic Police, which is those black cars that are in Pretoria, but they operate nationally. And then I came back, I started a company consultants in 2014. And then from there, I was again taken by the city as the chief of police in 2017. And then from then, I came back again as the MMC. I left, and then I came back as the MMC for public safety. So therefore, all my life, it's about public safety.
Indeed. Thank you very much for sharing that interesting pedigree with us. Personally, the first question that listeners are quite keen to hear is that during your tenure as the chief, what are the biggest challenges in enforcing law in the city?
The biggest challenge in enforcing law is that in the inner city specifically, there's too much lawlessness. Counterfeit goods, hijacked buildings, bylaw enforcement, motorists, they didn't care about the rule of law in terms of skipping the robots, driving facing oncoming traffic. So it was a plethora of infringement that were happening in the inner city. But then what I did is I started having special units, because I learned international that you can't have the major police or metro police just go out without knowing what they are going to do. So I have a transport unit. So I have a bylaw unit. So I had those units so that each and every commander is accountable every Tuesday and say what he has done and what are the challenges.
Those are, yeah, but, you know, I think it's quite interesting that obviously you use them, your international exposure, to create a specialized unit, because there are obviously different aspects of security or different aspects of lawlessness. But one of the biggest issues that South Africans often complain about, when particularly around, whether it's JMPD or TMPD or even SAPS as a whole, is issues around corruption. The same officers that are entrusted by public to promote and safeguard assets are seen. Obviously, this is not all. They're always bad apples. How have you been able to deal with bad apples within Metro? That obviously you know, obviously were masquerading as you know, law-abiding officer or law-abiding enforcers, and yet being very brutal to communities. How have you been able to address delinquency within the force?
Yes, the most effective one that I did was when I was a chief of National Traffic Police, NTP. In that one, I started it in Tswane. So what happened is, if one take a bribe in that unit, especially in that platoon that will be on shift on that day, then I had to suspend all of them, because all of them, they knew that somebody is taking bribes. So it stopped people from taking bribes, because they will say all of them, including their commander, will have to be suspended and face a disciplinary hearing. So you need to come up with a plan, because not that everybody is corrupt, but there's a certain unit that you'll find that they specialize. When you join it, when you are still new, they'll make sure that you have to comply. They've got their own rules that is not recognized by the management on how they deal with this corrupt behavior.
Interesting that you obviously, you know, if one, but obviously, in how can I put it? It's a very difficult, you know, line of job when the conditions are supposedly not the best, and you know, some of the officers take chances, and also motorists take chances, because it's a two-way stream. You can't punish the officers, you know, while at some instances the motorists are the one who actually agitate for bribes. What METRA has done to try and promote or conscientize, you know, both parties of the implications for bribery?
The officers, you see, officers need to be motivated to do their best. So by having an officer of the year, officer of the month, and also I used to do that. So there are those officers, when they are offered a bribe, they will arrest the motorist just for offering them a bribe. We have a lot of them in JMPD. So I used to have stats that was presented to the community or on the media that we have arrested so many motorists who are offering us a bribe. And you motivate them, because the people who get exposure mostly are the wrongdoers, because those that are taking bribes, they get exposure. We talk about them on radio, we talk about them on, but what about those who are doing well? During my time, I think you'll remember that they used to assist the motorists in changing tires on the freeway. They used to escort them if ever hasn't got petrol, and go and get petrol for them, and then they drive without issuing them a fine or whatever it is. But those good things are not, the public doesn't know about it. It is not their fault. It is the leadership fault that doesn't give them the exposure and make say to them, thank you for doing a good job.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the more officers are being promoted, or at least the more this communication advocacy of the good deeds, the more public will have a different perception of the police force. Earlier on, you raised a very important point around buildings that have been hijacked in the CBD. And that is one of the biggest challenges which South Africa is actually experiencing. But in your tenure, how many are you able to give us highlights of your successes in terms of, you know, recapturing buildings that were hijacked by criminals? And if you could just give us a sense, typically what happens if a building has been hijacked, and who are the biggest culprits from your perspective?
I had a very good support from Mayor Mashaba, because whatever I do, he will come and give me support politically, because I was an administrator. So mine was to do the operations to ensure that we focus on doing what we're doing, and he was doing on the political side. But he gave us a very, very much good support. We even arrested most of them, and we used to go to court with Mayor Mashaba to ensure that those that we have arrested, and the support mostly of General Pembe, because during that time I was working with General Pembe. This was the one who was, he was the one who was doing all this this thing to give support. So we had a couple of buildings that we have claimed we got it from the criminals. And besides that, there was, Mayor Mashaba has established JIFIS. This was for, that was doing the investigation that was run by General Sibiya. So he will go and do all the police work, and us will come and do as metros, because the powers that we have is different from what SAPS has. So we're doing it jointly with SAPS, Home Affairs, to ensure that those people that we take them out, either they go to Lindela or we give them alternative accommodation. Now, the challenges that we're facing mostly is these NGOs, like SIRN. For example, they just take us to court after we have moved them. Yet the same building that was hijacked, it's a condemned building because it has got no water, no electricity, no ablution. It's not fit for people to stay in it. EMS, Emergency Management Services, has condemned those buildings. And it was for us to remove them. But the question is, where do you take them?
Interesting quagmire that you guys were experiencing. We're pretty much about to wrap up our conversation. Let's take a quick break. But when we come back, I want you to address, and you know, the issue around political interference, which we have been made aware that there is a lot of political interference, particularly in the context or in environment where you evict illegally occupied buildings. But again, I also want to hear from you, these NGOs, on what basis are they taking you to court on, you know, and perhaps maybe what has been the best way, you know, in addressing those kind of challenges. Let's take a break, and we'll break in a second.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back. It is now almost 9 minutes to 7. It's amazing how time flies when you are really having interesting conversations that are illuminating. I'm joined by David Tembe, the former chief of Johannesburg Metropolis Department. And he's giving us, before we took that break, he gave us a snippets of some of his successes, particularly in the context of addressing hijacked buildings. And by the time we took that break, I wanted a follow-up from him, that because he had said to us the success was underpinned by political support, which he got from the then former city,
Mayor Mashaba.
I beg your pardon. So there's that big element of political support which he claims he have received from Mashaba. Can you take us through that once again? How big is that of a problem in political interference? And if there is, how does it manifest itself?
Yes, because we, as the police, what we have to do, we just have to follow the law. But sometimes you go into a certain building whereby you'll do cordon and search us and the SAPS. And after doing those cordon and search, it's when some of the politicians will come there and say, but this one don't interfere with it. He's one of us. Then I said, but one of you, but we have to enforce the law. But if once you become so strict in opposing the political side of it, then it's easy for them to get rid of you and say that, well, you don't want to comply, you don't understand how it is. But we were getting it right. So counterfeit goods, for counterfeit goods. hijacked buildings. Some of the buildings, when you go to Juve, the owners of those buildings has been killed. They are no more there. So some of the buildings that have been hijacked, that's when we're talking right now, belong to the city. Sure. So it's something that it's a dice. It's because of corruption. There's a corruption between the officials and the criminals. So therefore, it is a bit difficult sometimes to deal with it. But you have to do your job, and you'll get the support if you do your job. So with SERI, the NGOs, they'll always take us to court. I remember I've been to court, I don't remember for how many times, but they say that you can't evict people in those buildings unless you take them somewhere. So that's where the problem is. They use the human rights issue.
But why is it that buildings that are unsafe, that have been declared unsafe, are not locked down to a point where it makes it difficult for them, for anybody to access? Because you, if you're dealing with the problem of evicting people illegally occupiers of the building, surely you ought to prevent them from accessing the building so that you don't sit with the problem of being taken to court by NGOs on a basis that you're infringing on your human rights.
Yes, but we can't evict people regardless whether the building is condemned or not, unless you are taking them somewhere. So we work hand in hand with immigration, and we're working very, very well with Minister Motsoaledi, because he will even educate us on what is there that we must look for. And those are some of the things. Right now I've got Homestead Park. It's occupied, there are cows, there are everything. We wanted to do an operation whereby we have to remove them, because you can't have cows in the Homestead. And we've got the bowling club in Parkhurst. There are about 22 people who are staying there. I went there now with my MMC, Dr. We went there, we have a look. There's not even toilets. They just came there and sit there. Then when we said that we want to remove them, and then the lawyer said, where are you going to take them? You have to take them. We're supposed to have done it last week. So those are some of the issues that stops us from not performing properly. But we are closing all those loopholes, and you'll see what will happen by end of next month.
So clearly there has to be some policy reform that empowers metros to execute their work in terms of addressing squatters as well as illegal occupants of any building. So if you had it your way, what sort of policy reform that you were to push forward such that the work of officials are not stopped by NGO, as you've put it?
Yes, I've got a very good, and we are working very well with Dr. Tinatuaku, who's the MMC of Public Safety. I am his advisor now. So what I suggested to him that we must put it to the political, if we can get two buildings in the inner city, refurbish them, maybe it's 20 floor, 18 floor, refurbish them. And then when we move all those people, we just take them there. And then we said, for 6 months, you'll be paying maybe 3,000 a month, or we'll be paying 2,000 a month just to maintain that building, so that after that, then we're able to move, to go to the next block, and we take it off, go to the next block, and then we take it over. So those are the things that we need to do as the city. Because once you want to remove them and put them on the outskirts, on the farms, they won't go there. And another thing is, what I've learned is that the city used to remove people without demolishing the building. Then some other people, after we have moved them, give them an accommodation, then some other people move in there. And then it's a it's a circus. So we don't need to do that. Once we remove them, let's either demolish or refurbish that building. But we must have a standby, maybe three buildings, 18 floor or 20 floors or whatever it is, where we put them there while they're still looking for a place to stay.
Absolutely. Mr. David Temba, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Very interesting insights that you've shared with us. That gives a sense of how complex our inner city environment is, which does call for a collaboration with different stakeholders, because you, obviously there's a legal fraternity, there's administrators, there's civil society organization, and the very same NGOs, because people need to be educated so that you're able to do your work. I will definitely take a follow-up with you. I'll request my producer once again to bring you online, because there's just so many issues that are of interest to us, so that you can share your wisdom with us, particularly success stories, because it's well and good to identify problems. We are interested in solutions. So based on my conversation with the new, there's a lot that you can share with us. Unfortunately, like I said, we're going to have to leave it. It has been absolutely beautiful. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
There we go. That was David Tembe, who is the former chief of Metropolis in Johannesburg, giving us a very interesting observation. We're going to have to leave it here. It's raining outside. Please look after yourself. Drive safely. Craig on the controller, thank you very much for navigating the space, and I want to also extend my gratitude to Betsy for coordinating and bringing Mr. Tembe in. Let's do this again next week. Shalom.